Chapter 23. Captain Balhan stood immobile at his command lectern and tried to control his breathing as he watched the three majestic figures gathered on the bridge of the Ferrum. Iron Father Diederik stood by helm control, similarly awed by the towering figures of the three Primarchs as they discussed how best to destroy the enemy forces on Istvan V. His readings of history had spoken of the charisma of ancient heroes of legend, the mighty Hector, brave Alexander, and the sublime Torquil. Tales spoke of how men had been struck dumb by their sheer majesty, and thus these heroes had been described in terms of wondrous hyperbole that were clearly exaggerated and designed to inflate their reputations. Balhan had discounted most such stories as overblown fabrications, until he had first laid eyes upon a Primarch and knew them to be true. But to see three of them gathered together was like nothing he could describe. No mere words could hope to convey the fearful awe he felt at beholding such perfect visions of warriors as stood on the bridge of his ship. Ferus Manus, clad in his shimmering, fuliginous armour, stood a head taller than his brothers, pacing like a caged Medusan snow lion as he awaited news of the rest of his legion. He punched one silver fist into his palm as he paced, and Balhan could see the urgent need to take the fight to the traitors in his every movement. Next to the broad, mightily muscled Primarch of the Iron Hands, Korax of the Raven Guard was tall and slender. His armour was also black, but it seemed to be utterly non-reflective, as though it swallowed any light that dared to fall upon it. The white trim of his shoulder guards was fashioned from pale ivory, and great wings of dark feathers swept upwards to either side of his pallid, aquiline features. His eyes were murderously dark coals, and long, gleaming talons of silver were unsheathed over his gauntlets. So far, the Primarch of the Raven Guard had said nothing, but Balhan had heard this of Korax, that he was a taciturn warrior who kept his counsel until he had something of worth to impart. The third of the Primarchs was Vulcan of the Salamanders, a brother with whom Ferus Manus had a great friendship, for both were craftsmen as well as warriors. Vulcan's skin was dark and swarthy, and his eyes carried a depth of wisdom that had humbled the greatest scholars of the Imperium. His armour was a shimmering sea green, though each gleaming ceramite plate was embellished with images of flame, picked out in a profusion of coloured chips of quartz. One shoulder guard was fashioned from the skull of a great fire drake, said to have been the beast Vulcan had hunted in his contest with the Emperor hundreds of years ago, while over the other was draped a long mantle of iron-hard scales taken from the hide of another mighty drake of Nocturne. Vulcan bore a wondrously crafted weapon with a top-loading magazine and perforated barrel formed in the shape of a snarling dragon. Balhan had heard of the gun, its brass and silver body having been crafted by Ferus Manus many years ago for his brother Primarch. Balhan had watched as his Primarch had presented it once again to Vulcan, and felt great pride swell within him as the dark-skinned warrior had graciously accepted the legendary weapon and sworn to bear it in the coming battle. To stand in close proximity to such mighty warriors was an honour Balhan knew would never be equalled. He resolved to remember every detail of this moment and record it as best he could, so that future captains of the Ferrum would know the honour accorded their vessel in times past. Balhan had pushed the crew of his ship to its very limit to reach the Istvan system with such speed, and now that they had arrived, it was to find that they had come alongside the fleets of the Raven Guard and Salamanders. Discreet reconnaissance had identified enemy positions, and the Primarchs had mapped out landing zones as well as optimal attack patterns, but without the other legions tasked with destroying Horus's rebellion, nothing could be done. To have reached their destination and be unable to enact the Emperor's will was a supreme frustration, but even Ferus Manus's rage had recognised that they could not overwhelm the War Master's forces without support. 10 companies of the Morlocks were berthed throughout the Ferrum, the deadliest and most experienced warriors of the Legion. And Balhan knew that whatever force was arrayed against the Terminators, it could not survive their wrath. The Iron Hands would undertake the initial assaults with the veterans of their Legion, and Balhan felt that it was appropriate that the Legion's best warriors should be first into battle. Led by Gabriel Santar, the Morlocks hungered to confront the Emperor's children and make them pay for the dishonourable murders done to their number in the Anvilarium of the Fist of Iron. The rest of the 52nd Expedition was following behind the Ferrum, but when they might arrive, in system, was unknown, and every second their assault was delayed gave the traitors more time to fortify their positions. The legions of Korax and Vulcan were in position to commence their attack runs on Istvan V, but Astropath Sistor had received no word from Ferus Manus's brother Primarchs of the Word-Bearers, Night Lords, Iron Warriors, or Alpha Legion.
"Are all units ready and in position?" asked Ferus Manus, without turning from the viewing screen.
Balhan nodded and said,
"They are, my lord."
"Still no word from the rest of the legions?"
"None, my lord," said Balhan, checking the link to the choral chambers of the Legion's few surviving astropaths. The same ritual had been repeated every few minutes as Ferus Manus chafed at the delay in ordering the attack, the waiting interminable for warriors who lusted to strike back at those who tarnished the honour of their brothers with their treachery. The hatch to the bridge slid open, and a pair of the Terminator-armoured Morlocks entered, followed by the gaunt figure of Astropath Sistor. Barely had he stepped within the bridge than Ferus Manus was at his side, his gleaming hands taking the Astropath by the shoulders in a crushing grip.
"What news of the other legions?"
demanded Ferus, his craggy features and blazing silver eyes centimetres from Sistor's.
"My lord, I have personally received word from your brother Primarchs," said Sistor, squirming in the Primarch's grip.
"And? Tell me, are they en route? Can we commence the attack?"
"Ferus," said Korax, his voice soft, yet laden with quiet authority, "you will crush him to death before he tells you. Release him." Ferus let out a shuddering breath and stepped back from the quivering astropath as Vulcan stepped forward and said,
"Tell us what you have heard."
"The legions of the Word-Bearers, Alpha Legion, Iron Warriors and Night Lords, are mere hours behind us, my lord Vulcan," said Sistor calmly. "They will break warp close to the fifth planet."
"Yes," shouted Ferus, punching the air and turning to his brother Primarchs. "The honour of drawing first blood in this battle falls to us, my brothers. We go for full planetary assault."
Ferus's enthusiasm was infectious, and Balhan felt his blood fire with the knowledge that they were soon to take the wrath of the Emperor's judgment to the traitors. His Primarch resumed his pacing of the bridge as he threw out orders to his brothers.
"The Morlocks and I will take the vanguard," said Ferus. "Korax, your legion is to secure the right flank of the Urgyle Depression and then push into the centre. Vulcan, you have the left wing."
The Primarchs nodded at Ferus's words, and Balhan could see that even the normally stoic Korax relished the prospect of destroying the enemy below.
"The other legions will make planet fall as soon as they break warp. They will secure the drop site and reinforce our assault," cried Ferus, his eyes ablaze with magnesium fire.
He shook his brother's hands and turned to address the crew of the Ferrum.
"The traitors are not expecting us to assault so soon, and we have the advantage of surprise. The Emperor damn us if we waste it."
The delays enforced upon Ferus Manus had not been wasted by the War Master's forces. Since their arrival at Istvan V, 8 days ago, the warriors of the World Eaters, Death Guard, Sons of Horus, and Emperor's Children had deployed throughout the defences constructed along the ridge of the Urgyle Depression, making ready for the howling storm of battle that was soon to descend upon them. Behind them, long-range support squads manned the walls of the fortress, and army artillery pieces waited to shower any attacker with high-explosive death. The Dies Irae stood before the wall, its colossal guns primed and ready to visit destruction on the enemies of the Warmaster. Princeps Ternit personally swearing to atone for the treachery that had engulfed his command during the Battle of Istvan III. Nearly 30,000 Astartes hunkered down on the northern edge of the Urgal, their guns ready and their hearts steeled to the necessity of what must be done. The skies remained an unbroken canopy of slate-grey clouds, and the only sound to break the ghostly howl of the wind was the scrape of metal on metal. A sense of historic solemnity hung over the black desert, as though all gathered knew that these were the last moments of quiet in what was soon to be a bloody battlefield. The first warning came when a dull red-orange glow built behind the clouds, bathing the Urgal in fiery light. Then came the sound, a low roar that built from a deep thrumming bass to a shrieking whine. Alarm sounded and the clouds split apart as individual streaks of light burned through and fell in a cascading torrent of fire. Thunderous explosions ripped along the edge of the Urgal, and the entire length of the Warmaster's forces was engulfed in a searing, roaring bombardment. For long minutes, the forces of the Emperor pounded the Urgal from orbit, a firestorm of unimaginable ferocity hammering the surface of Istvan V with the power of the world's end. Eventually, the horrific bombardment ceased, and the drifting echoes of its power faded, along with the acrid smoke of explosions. But the Emperor's children had performed perfectly in creating a network of defences from which to face their former brothers, and the forces of the Warmaster had been well protected. From his vantage point in the alien keep, the Warmaster smiled, and he watched the sky darken once again as thousands upon thousands of drop pods streaked through the atmosphere towards the planet's surface. He turned to the bellicose armoured figure of Angron and the gloriously presented Fulgrim and said, "Mark this day well, my friends. The Emperor's loyalists are heading to their doom." The noise was horrendous, a never-ending howl of fire that turned the interior of the drop pod into a blisteringly hot oven. Only the ceramite plates of their armour allowed the Astartes to launch an attack in this manner, and Santar knew that their lightning assault would catch the traitors at their most vulnerable while they reeled from the power of the orbital barrage. Ferus Manus sat opposite Santar, an unfamiliar sword across his lap, and the fire of their descent reflected in the silver of his eyes. Another three of the Morlocks filled the drop pod, the greatest warriors of the Legion, and the bloody tip of the spear that would drive hard in the foe's vitals. The skies above the Urgal Depression would be thick with drop pods, the combined might of three legions slashing through the air to exact a blood vengeance upon their erstwhile brothers, and Santar could feel the powerful desire to destroy the Warmaster's traitors in every breath he took through the new metallic chassis of his body.
10 seconds to impact, screamed the automated Vox unit.
Santar tensed and pressed himself hard against the central core of the drop pod, the servos of his Terminator armour locking in place in preparation for the colossal force of impact. He could hear thunderous, booming explosions from beyond the armoured petals of the drop pod, recognising them as enemy battery fire. It seemed inconceivable that any enemy had survived the bombardment. The jerk of retro-burners, followed by the crushing hammer blow of the landing, tore at his grav-harness, but Santar was a veteran of such assaults, and was well used to the violence of such screaming deceleration. No sooner had the drop-pod hit than explosive bolts blew out the hatches and the scorched panels fell outwards. The grav-harness released, and Santar charged out onto the surface of Istvan V. His first sight was of mountainous flames as the fire of thousands of drop pods turned the grey skies into a weave of light and smoke. Explosions marched across the ground as artillery shells smashed into the earth and armoured bodies were pulped by the monstrous shockwaves.
The ridge before him was awash with gunfire, streams of it flickering back and forth as thousands of Astartes engaged in a furious firefight.
"Onwards!" shouted Ferus Manus, setting off towards the ridge.
Santar and the Morlocks followed him into the crazed maelstrom of the battle, seeing that the bulk of the Iron Hands had impacted in the very heart of the enemy's defences. The black desert burned in the aftermath of the bombardment, and the twisted remains of shattered bunkers, redoubts, and collapsed trenches were a grisly testament to its power. Nearly 40,000 loyal Astartes fought along the length of a ridge before the towering walls of an ancient fortress, the speed and ferocity of their assault catching the traitors completely off guard. Even with the filtering of his armor's senses, the noise of battle was appalling. Gunfire, explosions, and screaming cries of hatred. The flames of war lit up the clouds above, and streaks of fire whipped across the battlefield in deadly arcs of bullets and high-energy lasers. The ground rumbled with the footfalls of an angry leviathan as the Dies Irae strode through the flurries of missiles and gunfire, its mighty weaponry blazing and gouging huge tears through the loyalist ranks. Miniature suns exploded in the desert as the Titan's plasma weaponry blasted craters hundreds of meters in diameter, obliterating hundreds of Astartes at a stroke, and turning the sand to shimmering dark glass. Ferus Manus was a god of war, smashing traitors to the ground with blows from his shimmering fists, or blasting them apart with an ornately crafted pistol of enormous caliber. The sword he had brought was belted at his side, and Santar wondered what it was and why he had bothered to bring it. 100 traitors emerged from a ruined trench complex before them, a mix of Death Guard and Sons of Horus, and Santar slid the lightning-sheathed blades from his gauntlets. Amid the riotous confusion of the battle, Santar relished this chance for simple bloodletting. The traitors stood their ground, firing their guns from their hips as the Iron Hands smashed into them. Santar disemboweled his first opponent and waded into the rest with a speed that would have done any warrior in Mark IV plate proud. Bolts and the roaring blades of chainswords struck him, but his armour was proof against such things. Ferus Manus slaughtered enemy warriors by the dozen, their traitorous nerve failing in the face of such a majestic avatar of battle. The trenches and bunkers were a mass of thousands of struggling warriors against a backdrop of explosions and the tremendous noise of slaughter. Orders and cries of victory or despair flashed through his helmet vox, but Santar ignored them, too caught up in the cathartic release of killing to pay them any mind. Even amid the chaos of fighting, Santar could see that the battle for the Urgal Depression was going well. Hundreds, perhaps even thousands of traitors had been slaughtered in the opening moments of the assault. Entire chapters of the salamanders pressed home the shock of their attack with flame units cleansing the trenches and dugouts of enemies in stinking promethium tongues of fire. Streaks of sunfire stabbed through the smoke-wreathed darkness, and Santar recognized the light as fire from the weapon his Primarch had gifted to Vulcan. Sure enough, the mighty figure of Vulcan strode through the torrents of bolts, killing with every sweep of his sword and shot of the weapon his brother had forged in his name. A colossal explosion erupted at the Primarch's feet, wreathing him in killing fire, and dozens of his fire drakes were hurled through the air, their armor molten and the flesh seared from their bones. Vulcan marched through the fire, unscathed, continuing to kill traitors without missing a beat. Ferus Manus pushed deeper into the ranks of the traitors. Their training had never prepared them to face the wrath of a Primarch. The Morlocks followed behind their lord and master, a fighting wedge forging a bloody path through the filthy traitors with every shot and blow. Behind the tremendous thunderstrike of the assault, the heavy landers of the Loyalist fleets braved the storm of anti-aircraft fire ripping upwards from inside the ancient fortress. Burning craft spiraled to the ground, ripped apart in streams of tracer fire, or blown apart by mass-reactive torpedoes. Hundreds of aircraft jostled for position as they descended to the drop site, bringing heavy equipment, artillery, tanks and war machines to the surface of Istvan V.
Billowing clouds of granular dust obscured much of the landing zones as cavernous holds disgorged scores of land raiders and predator battle tanks. Entire companies of armored vehicles roared onto the surface of the planet, churning the sand beneath their tracks as they raced to join the battle on the ridge. Whirlwinds and army artillery units deployed on the desert flats, spreading out and zeroing in on enemy emplacements, added their own thunder to the constant crack and rumble of battle. Even heavier craft descended on burning columns of fire, and the super-heavy tanks of the army rumbled out, the barrels of their massive guns hurling huge shells against the glassy walls of the fortress. What had begun as a massed strike against the traitor's position was rapidly turning into one of the largest engagements of the entire Great Crusade. All told, over 60,000 Astartes warriors clashed on the dusky plains of Istvan V, and for all the wrong reasons, this battle was soon to go down in the annals of imperial history as one of the most epic confrontations ever fought. The Loyalist attack was bending the line of the traitors back, a curving arc of battle with Ferus Manus at its centre. The screaming raptors of Korax's Raven Guard cut a swathe through the enemy's right flank, his fearsome assault wings dropping from above on the fire of jump packs and slaughtering their foes with shrieking sweeps of curved blades. Korax darted like a dark bird of prey, leaping through the air with his winged jump pack and killing with every stroke of his mighty talons. Vulcan salamanders burned the traitor's left flank, plumes of fire marking the extent of their advance. But for every success, the traitors thus far had an answer. The terrifying form of the World Eater's Primarch cut through hundreds of loyal Astartes as they tried to force a crossing through a killing zone of World Eater support squads. Angron bellowed like a primordial god of battle, his twin swords carving bloody ruin through any who dared stand before them. As easily as the traitors died at the blades of Korax, Ferus Manus, and Vulcan, so too did the loyalists die at those of the Red Angel. In contrast to the brute savagery of Angron, Mortarion, the Death Lord, killed with a grim efficiency, harvesting scores of loyalist lives with every sweep of his terrifying war scythe. His Death Guard fought with grim tenacity. Where the traitor Primarch stood, none could live, the loyalist assault breaking against them like the tide on immovable cliffs. Throughout the traitor lines, the sons of Horus fought with bitter hatred in their hearts, first Captain Abaddon, leading the War Master's finest in battle, his wrath terrible to behold. He killed with unremitting savagery, while Horus Aximand fought beside him, his blows mechanical and forlorn, as his haunted eyes took in the scale of the slaughter. In the centre of the traitor line, the Emperor's children fought with unremitting cruelty, its warriors howling with savage glee as they killed their former brothers. Unnatural horrors of mutilation and degradation were visited upon the living and the dead as Fulgrim's legion repulsed every attack, though their Primarch was yet to be seen. Bizarrely clad warriors in Mark IV plate, draped in stretched skin, cavorted in the midst of the deadliest combats, fighting without helmets, their jaws wired open as they unleashed a hideous screaming. They bore unknown weaponry and fired echoing blasts of atonal harmonics that ripped bloody canyons in the massed ranks of the Iron Hands. Great pipes and loud speakers fixed to their armour amplified the screaming vibrations of their killing music, and deafening sound waves tore apart warriors and armoured vehicles. As the bulk of the heavier equipment was landed behind the ferocious battle, more and more explosions erupted in the traitors' lines, and even Angron and Mortarion were forced to pull back out of range of the loyalist artillery. In the centre of the battle, Ferus Manus pushed ever onwards, his iron hands pushing deeper and deeper into the heart of the enemy defences as they sought to punish the traitors and unleash their wrath on the Emperor's children. Thousands were dying every minute, the slaughter terrible to behold. Blood ran in rivers down the slopes of the Urgal Depression, carving thick, sticky runnels in the dark sand.
Such destruction had never yet been concentrated in such a horrifically confined space. Enough martial power to conquer an entire planetary system having been unleashed in a line less than 20 kilometers wide. Entire squadrons of armored vehicles fought to reach the front lines, but the press of armored bodies was so thick that their commanders were frustrated in their desire to crush the traitors beneath their armored bulk. Firing lines of land raiders formed, and collimated lines of ruby laser fire stabbed towards the fortress and the leviathan-like form of the Dies Irae. Void shields flickered, and realizing the danger, the monstrous Titan switched its fire from the infantry to the armor. Rippling blasts of plasma energy soared along the line of tanks, and a dozen exploded as the white heat of fire torched their energy magazines. The slaughter continued unabated, on a scale never before seen, with neither side able to press home their advantages. The traitors were well dug in and had defensible positions, but the loyalists had landed virtually directly on top of them, with a vast numerical superiority. The bloodletting was a truly horrific sight, as warriors who had once sworn great oaths of loyalty to one another fought their brothers with nothing but hatred in their hearts. No legion fared well in the slaughter, the scale of the fighting rendering tactics meaningless, as the two armies battered each other bloody in a remorseless conflict that threatened to destroy them all. Julius danced through the combat, the sights and sounds of the killing causing rushes of physical pleasure to spasm through his body as he fought with savage joy. His armor was dented and gashed in a dozen places, but the wounds he had suffered only spurred his frenetic killing dance to greater heights. In preparation for the fighting, he had repainted its every surface in a riot of colors that stimulated his freshly reborn vision. He had similarly enhanced his weapons, and the looks of horror and disgust that accompanied his every killing blow fired his senses.
"Look upon me, and realize the greyness of your lives," he screamed as he fought, delirious with slaughter.
He had long since discarded his helmet to better experience the chaos of the battle, the roar of the guns, the buzz of swords through flesh, the explosions and the vividness of shell traceries across the heavens. He ached to have Fulgrim next to him in this most exquisite of battles, but the Warmaster had plans enough for the Primarch of the Emperor's children. A petulant frown creased Julius's ecstatic features, and he spun to deliver a perfectly aimed decapitating strike at a dark-armored Iron Hands warrior. Horus and his plans! Where amongst these plans was the time to enjoy the spoils of victory? The powers and desires awakened within him by the Maravigilia were for the using. To deny them was to deny one's own nature. Julius swept up the helmet he had just cut from his enemy and plucked the head from within, taking a moment to savour the stink of the blood and scorched flesh where his blade had cauterized it.
"We were brothers once," he cried with mock gravitas. "But now you are dead."
He leaned in and kissed the cold lips of the Iron Hand, laughing as he hurled it high into the air, where it was ripped apart in the near-constant hail of bolts. Whooping howls of manic laughter and thrumming bass explosions swept towards him, and he threw himself flat as a killing wave of sound roared overhead. The musical wave was excruciatingly loud, but Julius screamed in pleasure as the noise sluiced through his flesh. Julius rolled to his feet in time to see a burnished group of Terminators lumbering towards him, and he grinned in feral glee as he saw they were led by Gabriel Santa, the first captain's markings on his armor standing out like a beacon in the darkness. A whooshing roar of clashing noise tore a great furrow in the ground beside him and blasted upwards from the black sand like a volcanic eruption. Behind him, Julius saw the flesh-wrapped form of Marius and roared with the pleasure of seeing his fellow captain alive and fighting. Marius Verosian had embellished his armour with jagged iron spikes and had torn the skin from the dead of Laphanice to decorate its blood-slathered plates. Like Julius, he had not walked away from the Maravigilia without alteration. The monstrous distension of his jaws, locking his mouth open in a constant howling scream. Where his ears had once been were two great gashes carved in his flesh, and his eyes were stitched open, forever prevented from closing. He still carried the great musical instrument he had taken from Bekwakinska's orchestra, modified to bear spiked handles and grips to render it into a terrifying sonic weapon. Together, he and his fellows unleashed a barrage of discordant scales that sent a dozen of the Morlocks into convulsions, and Julius screamed his appreciation as he leapt to meet Gabriel Santar with his sword aimed at his throat. The horror of what he was seeing almost cost Gabriel Santar his life. The Emperor's children before him were like nothing he could ever have imagined in his worst nightmares. Though the enemies he had fought before had been honourless traitors, at least they had still been recognisable as Astartes. These were degenerate perversions of that perfect ideal, warped and twisted freaks who openly displayed their perversions. A mutilated monster in power armor, draped with bloody flaps of skin, shrieked as he swept some bizarre weapon back and forth, its deadly sonic energies tearing warriors apart in explosions of ruptured armor and liquefied flesh. Even as Santar raised his energized fist to block a sword cut aimed at his head, he recognized the twisted features of Julius Caeseron. The warrior was a thrashing dervish, laughing and howling as he spun like a lunatic around Santar, slashing wildly as he attacked. Caeseron's weapon was a fearsome, energized glaive that was easily capable of carving through his armor, and Santar turned as fast as he was able to block each ferocious stroke of the blade. But even one as fast as he could not hope to match his opponent's serpent-like speed. He caught the descending blade of his opponent's weapon between the digits of his energy-wreathed fist, and a fiery explosion burst between them. He twisted his wrist, and Julius's blade snapped, leaving only the length of a forearm above the Quillon's. Santar grunted in pain as he felt the skin of his fist fuse with the melted plates around his hand. He saw Julius sprawled on his back, the ceramite armor of his breastplate bubbling with the residue of the explosion, his face a screaming, burnt horror of seared flesh and exposed bone. Despite the pain of his burnt claw of a hand, Santar grinned beneath his helmet and stomped forwards to deliver the avenging death blow to his hated enemy. He raised his foot to stamp down on Julius's chest, the power of his Terminator armor easily able to crush Astartes' plate. Then he saw that Julius wasn't screaming in pain, but in orgasmic pleasure. He paused in revulsion for the briefest second, but that second was all that Julius needed. Sweeping up the broken edge of his glaive, the blade alive with flaring energies, he rammed it into Santar's groin. The pain was unimaginable, surging agonizingly around his body. Julius Caeseron tore the remains of the weapon upward, molten gobbets of armor dropping to the dark sand in the midst of a spraying rain of Santar's blood. The blade tore through his pubis and ripped into his breastplate as Julius rose to his feet with the motion of his sawing weapon. Santar's entire body convulsed in agony. Not even the frantically pumping pain balms able to mask the horrifying agony of having his torso carved open. He tried to move, but his armor was locked in place as Julius looked directly at him. His face was horrifically illuminated in the firelight of the battle, the skin peeled away from the musculature beneath, and the white gleam of bone jutting through his cheeks. Even amid the thunder of battle and with his lips burned away, Julius's next words were horribly clear to Santar as his life slipped away.
"Thank you," gurgled Julius. "That was exquisite!"
The battlefield of Istvan V was a slaughterhouse of epic proportions. Treacherous warriors, twisted by hatred, fought their once brothers in a conflict unparalleled in its bitterness.
Mighty gods walked the planet's surface, and death followed in their wake. The blood of heroes and traitors flowed in rivers, and hooded adepts of the Dark Mechanicum unleashed perversions of ancient technology stolen from the Eretian technocracy to wreak bloody havoc amongst the loyalists. All across the Urgal Depression, hundreds were dying with every passing second. The promise of inevitable death, a pall of darkness that hung over every warrior. The traitor forces were holding, but their line was bending beneath the fury of the loyalist assault. It would take only the smallest twists of fate for it to break. And then they came. Like fiery comets from the heavens, the thrusters of countless dropships, landers, and assault craft broke through the fire-shot clouds of smoke and descended to the Loyalist landing zone on the northern edge of the Urgal Depression. Hundreds of stormbirds and thunderhawks roared towards the surface, their armoured hulls gleaming as the power of another four legions came to Istvan, their heroic names legendary. Their mighty deeds known the length and breadth of the galaxy. Alpha Legion, Word Bearers, Night Lords, Iron Warriors.